David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Advisor with Stacey Chalevi. We have an amazing guest today. We have author Aaron Ryan, and he is a sci-fi author. He writes amazing books. He has a series out right now, and he's coming out soon with his next book. And he has a book right now that he previously published that he's going to talk about also. But he has an amazing story, and he does amazing things with his storytelling and his books. And he is just a fabulous writer. So we had to have him on the show because he's just amazing. So Aaron, why don't you tell everybody a little about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, well, I'm amazing. I'll take that adjective. Thank you so much. I'm an author. I'm a sci-fi author, and I've penned what I thought was only going to be a single novel that just ballooned into a trilogy, and then it demanded two prequels, and I'm actually working on a follow-up. So it's going to be, I think the word is hexalogy. It is a pentalogy right now, which is five books. The fifth is with the editor, but it eventually is going to be a hexalogy because I've got the cover art for volume number four. Wow. I know that's confusing, but you'll see if you look at the pictures, the titling's a little different. It is the best thing I've ever written. It's loaded with heart. It's loaded with thematic depth. I'm so very grateful for where it's gone, because again, I was just going to write a single novel. One of the greatest things about it, though, is that the very first one in the original trilogy has been adapted for the screen and is actually being pitched to major streaming networks. So HBO Max, Netflix, Playtone, Imagine Entertainment, things like that. And that's like every author's dream to see it adapted for the screen. So where's wood? I need some wood. Knock, knock, knock. Very excited.
Wow, that is amazing. Now, did you always have a love for sci-fi? Like, where did your passion for writing science fiction come from?
I think absolutely I did. I mean, I was given an assignment in second grade. And this is a long time ago, so I don't want to say the year because then I'm going to date myself. You could probably see it was a long time ago, though, from the gray in here. My teacher in second grade gave us all an assignment, and it was to pen a story, just a short story. And it was, you know, we all remember the construction paper cover and the college rule, you know, three rule college, whatever you call it, line paper and silly rudimentary drawings, cartoonish drawings, stick figures. So I created The Electric Boy. And I think I was fresh off reading the novelization for E.T. when I was a kid. So I was interested in sci-fi and strange occurrences and all that. So I created The Electric Boy. And that was the very first thing that I remember creating that was my own authored work. But boy, when I stepped into Lord of the Rings by Tolkien, and I think the first time I read that was when I was 10. I started with Lord of the Rings and then went back and read The Hobbit. It was the first thing I remember that just electrified me. Like, it was, what is this? Yeah, it's so rich with depth and breadth and heart, and it's massive. And I'd read other things, so it was on a scale of which I'd never experienced before. That's fantasy, of course, but fantasy and sci-fi are very closely linked. From a very young age, I've just been a huge fan. You can tell I'm wearing my Lord of the Rings necklace around it. This is not the one. I just want to clarify. See, I'm still here. So I'm putting my finger through it, but I'm still here. But I have my family's names engraved into my wife and my two boys' names engraved into the ring.
Oh, that's awesome. I love it. I love it. Now, when you were writing, you know, where do you get your ideas from? Like, you know, you've always had an imagination for science fiction and adventure and really developing these ideas in your head. Everyone, you know, doesn't have the ability to take the ideas and the fantasies that come within them and put it on paper. How were you, what were some of your techniques to be able to like fantasize about certain adventures and actually be able to put them on paper? There's so many ways to write, and some people plan everything out from soup to nuts, and that's very hard to do because a book kind of has a mind of its own, and sometimes you think you're going to be writing about something a certain way, and all of a sudden the story takes you on a totally different journey. For you, how did you get those images and ideas on paper? And, did it take you on a totally different, pathway? Like, was it unexpected the way your stories started to go?
Well, how I did it was coffee. Lots of coffee all the time. Ultimately, I mean, I think I've just always been a dreamer, one foot on the ground and one head in the clouds type of thing. I've always been thinking, and you use the word fantasizing, and that's really true. Just kind of fantasizing about, ooh, I wonder if, or what would it be like? I'm thinking about ideas all the time, but it doesn't mean that I'm necessarily noting them down. And I do appreciate that for some people, the transference from your brain to paper or your brain to a document in your laptop or desktop or whatever can be hard for some people. For me, I'm very visually inspired. So the thing that we watched, the direct antecedent prior to, or precedent, I guess is the word, prior to writing the very first paragraphs of Dissonance Volume One Reality, which was the first one I wrote, was we watched I Am Legend. And my wife, I don't think I'd ever seen it. So we watched I Am Legend, and the earth is overrun. The earth is, almost everyone is killed off because of a rabies, which was a byproduct of a cancer, supposed cancer vaccine. And so the earth is overrun. There's weeds growing up through the cracks that are 5 feet tall. Lions are roaming the street, uncontained. And I wanted a little bit of that anarchy of what would Earth be like in 2042, 16 years after an alien invasion. What kind of aliens, would I have? My favorite movie of all time is Aliens with Sigourney Weaver. So big surprise that I wrote something about aliens. What a shock. But I think that I wanted something that where there had been an apocalypse, and I Am Legend really fed into that, because it's visual. I love, big fan of, it's a silly movie to some, but I really think it's genius, is Independence Day in 96. Such a great movie. So I knew I wanted something that was post-apocalyptic, very dystopian, not in the Hunger Games sense, but dystopian between, because it's the opposite of a utopia. And the odds really stacked against the protagonist by a creature that is multiple creatures that are tremendously deadly. I, as a little guy, was terrified out of my gourd by watching the 1981 Clash of the Titans claymation stop motion photography Medusa. So I don't know if anybody remembers that. I'm dating myself again, but it's claymation, so right away it's not real and it's not ever going to exist real. But the way that they freeze frame her, and her eyes light up green and she goes right towards the camera, and I ran out of the room as a little guy, and that's terrifies me to this day. So I incorporated some of that into my the antagonists in the book called the Gorgons. They're called that because they have the ability, they have a telepathic paralytic. You cannot ever lock eyes with these things. So they look like this for those who are joining us via video. You cannot ever lock eyes with them because if you do, they have a telepathic paralytic. They're going to freeze you where you stand. They're going to eat you at their leisure, and you're going to feel every single bite. So that's what I was inspired by Medusa. So
Now, when you made your book, like, because you had so many series so far that came out, did you plan on having these series, or was it a story that you just kept getting more ideas and you kept writing and writing, and then probably maybe the editor or the publisher looked at it and said, "Wow, we have more than one story here," like, because your imagination just took over, or was it planned like that?
I like the word trilogy. I mean, I love the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the Star Wars trilogy, the Lethal Weapon quadrilogy, the Alien quadrilogy. I love series. So, Hunger Games quadrilogy. I'm really fond of those anyway. But no, I just at the outset, I seriously just wanted to write a good singular novel that was full of suspense and a thrill ride and inspiring and terrifying and an easy read. As I progress through the story, I'm much more of a pantser. You have pantsers and planners. So planners plot everything out with bullet points, and pantsers are much more organic in their storytelling, and the characters tend to lead you, and art imitates life. So, you know, things happen to them and you go, oh, that could be cool. And you explore that road. And if it doesn't work, you come back and go back to the main road again.
Right.
But there were developments that happened in all of them, but particularly in the first one where I remember sitting back and going, whoa, there's a greater subtext at play here. There's a subtle undercurrent of a compelling side story that I need to explore.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
And so and there's a development that happens in volume one where I just went, okay, this is no longer only about aliens.
Yeah.
And mankind is always mankind's worst enemy. We are ourselves our worst enemy. So no, not really. Organically, it kind of became something far greater than I thought it would be, but I'm delighted that it did. I'm thoroughly delighted because the story became so much more robust.
I love it. I love it. Now you do voiceover. So are you going to make these into audio? And if you do make these into audio, are you going to do the voiceover for all these books?
Yeah, they're already done. Actually, the fifth one, they're all available in Kindle, paperback, hardcover, and an audiobook. The fifth one that is with the editor, I need to get the edits back before I record it. But as a voiceover artist, yes, I do not like doing audiobooks at all. I mean, they take way too long and they pay way too little. So, but these are, you know, there are people, I hate playing God as an author and you kill off people. You get to build and you get to construct, but you also have to destroy.
Right.
I hate that. I don't relish that part. So, in the first one, Volume 1 Reality, I had to kill off a character. It disassembled me in the writing. It disassembled me in the editing. And then you can hear it disassembling me in the narration of the audiobook. Other characters that I had to kill off, same thing. I'm just very disassembled and emotionally kind of taxed by it. I didn't feel like I would be remiss if I had farmed out the voiceover aspect of these books to anyone else who had not written the book, because they're my creations.
Yeah.
No one is going to feel as strongly attached to these people or this story as I will. And you hear that in the audiobook. So I do lots of accents. I do primarily corporate and e-learning voiceovers, but there are several accents. There's a Jamaican accent. There's British. There's Canadian. I wanted to do Australian and completely forgot. But I'm doing all those accents in there, and South, you know, Southwest Texan, Tennessean. They're in there. I had a blast doing it.
I love it. I love it. You know, it's funny, but you know, even though we know these characters are not real, when we start to create characters and we start to, you know, create stories that are fiction, you know, they become, even though they're not really there, they become our friends. We become attached to them because, and even though they're make believe, you know, because we spent so much time developing them, you kind of get attached to those characters. It's kind of like they're real, but they're not. You know what I mean? It's like you get the same emotional attachment as you would to another human being. And many people might not understand that, but when you sit for hours creating these characters, creating the story, and then when you're thinking about the story in your head, you're developing emotions, and you know, you're really feeling the story, and you're feeling these people, you know, like someone's fighting, you're feeling the anger because you're developing that anger on paper and you're writing it and you're visualizing it at the same time. And it's funny, but your blood could be stirring the same time you're writing about, you know, he's in battle with so-and-so, you know what I mean? Like, and so someone gets killed off, you know, you become attached to that character
You
because you've been
weep.
writing about that. Yeah, and it hits you know. And it's the same thing as someone watching a movie and they're in the theater and the person passes away and they start crying because they've grown an emotional attachment. And I think it probably is even worse for the writer because the writer spends so many hours developing the story and the character and everything else. What's your
Yeah.
intake on that?
It's spot on. It's absolutely spot on. This is Ruddy at the beginning of this or the cover of this book actually. And you get very attached to Ruddy. You get very attached to Jet. You get very attached to Allie and Joe Bassett. And you know, were any of those characters to lose their lives? And there are people, you know, in the story who lose their lives. It's completely disassembling. I have the characters completely fictional. I promise I'm not insane, but I have these fictional characters' birthdays in my Outlook calendar. So, you know, June 12th is Ruddy's birthday. October 16th is Cameron's birthday. They're in my real life calendar because I want them to exist.
Right.
And I just took a very, very surreal trip. It was kind of a pilgrimage. In fact, I actually created a website, dissonancepilgrimage.com, that forwards to my YouTube playlist. I visited Nashville and Clarksville, Tennessee, and Blue Spring, Kentucky over Labor Day weekend a few days ago. And I flew out there and drove all around and walked the very streets and visited the very buildings that my characters walked. What a mind trip. It was so surreal to be in, you know, these, it's almost like, it's almost seems blasphemous because you go to, you know, Israel to walk where Jesus walked,
Yeah.
or something like that. But to walk where my characters walked and to be in the very buildings that I had only ever seen on Google Satellite View or Google Street View,
Yeah.
so surreal, and such a rich experience because it just brings them to life even more. And
Yeah.
yes, you want them to exist. Yes, they do exist. Again, I promise I'm not crazy.
No, I get it. I get it completely. You know, there are times, like I was telling you, like, you know, I would develop these stories because I have such a vivid imagination. And, you know, you sometimes get attached to the stories that you create in your mind because sometimes bring you to a level of calmness, or they take you away to an area where it's not realistic, it's not there, but it lets you for a short period of time make believe that it's
Escape.
there. Yeah, it's an escape. And so you do become attached to those characters you create and those scenarios and everything because, you know, if you have that type of imagination, you know, you can it could let it could just it could make it could it make you escape to all ends of the earth. And, you know, it's a one when you talk about meditation, that's a great way to meditate too, you know. You
Read your
know,
books.
yeah.
I think the quintessential person, the master of that, was Tolkien, J.R.R. Tolkien, because, and he gets harped on a lot for this because he takes five paragraphs to describe a tree. I think that's genius. I think it's so immersive and it's such strength of world building. And Tolkien is Tolkien because he's Tolkien. It's just that's what he did. And so
Right.
these books, he slaved over them for 15 years, The Lord of the Rings. And that's why you have such richness of narrative and depth and breadth, where it feels Middle Earth is a place. Gandalf is a person. Frodo did have the ring. The ring is this tiny little thing. And it becomes so felt and attainable. And that's what I think that's what we all strive to do if we're writing reality or sorry, fiction that's grounded in reality, which mine
Yeah.
are. They're not. My books are not, you know, sleek starships set off in space on some distant planet with the Arturians, you know, bound and determined to kill us. No, it's grounded in reality right here on Earth in 2026 and 2042.
love it. I love it. Now, you know, there are so many people out there that would love to, you know, I hear people all the time. I always wanted to write a book. I always wanted to write a book, you know, and, you know, what's your advice to people? Because, you know, it is a very intense, you know, thing. You know, people don't realize how much time and energy goes into writing a book. It's kind of like a vacuum sucks the energy out of you, but you enjoy it so much that you do it anyway. But there's a lot of time and dedication and a lot of thought process that goes into these books. But for someone who, in the back of their head says, wow, I have a great story that I would love to share with the world, and I just, I've always wanted to write a book. What would be your response to them?
I love the phrase, in 15 years, what will you look back and wish you had done? Do it now. And that's my advice, is do it now. But there's several precautions to take when you do it now, or anytime you do it. Number one, I'm a huge fan of self-publishing. Traditional publishers are just going to wait forever with self. They're going to take a while before you can even hit the market with it. Self-publishing, you can get a lot faster. You can command higher royalties. You can retain creative control. You can choose your own marketing and graphic design and editing team and all of that. And I love the oversight that you can have. If you have a change because you have a typo, which has never happened to me, you always discover typos and you read and it's 5 years after release. You go, what? And then you can republish. You don't have to go through any channels. Very easy to do. But two things. One, please stay away from AI. Please avoid AI. If you use AI for supplemental works, like to think of an idea, which I don't frown on that, but I don't like it at the same time. If you use AI to generate some images of characters that don't exist in real life, but to help people visualize them in promotional materials, fine. But please don't use ChatGPT and OpenAI and any of those tools to write a story for you. It's cheating. You're sacrificing your God-given gift to create. And it's just kind of, I'm going to put the word despicable on it, because people are going to ChatGPT. They're saying, tell me a long story about blah, blah, blah. It does. You copy paste, you slap a cover on it, and then now you're a capitalist and you're basically making money off something a computer did. I think it's really lame.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion, capital at risk.
You have a creative gift. Use that. Don't stoop to AI. And the reason I say that is because I am a full-time voiceover artist. AI is completely eroding the voiceover industry, as it is many creative industries. It's actually pushed me back stronger into writing books and novels, because it's eroding and I'm pivoting. I'm adapting and overcoming. So avoid AI. Two, you don't need to be the next Suzanne Collins or Isaac Asimov or Stephen King or, Tolkien or anybody. Be yourself. It's okay to pay homage to them, a tip of the hat here and there, but Oscar Wilde said, be yourself, everyone else is already taken. And I love that phrase. And the third and final thing is, I love this phrase. I'm going to show a little plaque I had made, and I'll just say what it was. But this comes from a movie I like to pretend does not exist, Star Wars, The Phantom Menace. And Qui-Gon Jinn says to a young Anakin Skywalker, your focus determines your reality. That's my mantra. So my focus is writing great books and that eventually becoming our livelihood. That is my absolute focus, and it will eventually be my absolute reality, as voiceovers became. Those two
I
things.
Love it. And you know what? It's so true. You can't rely on AI to write your book. That is cheating. And you know what? It's not the same quality. A human AI cannot communicate. Compete with a human's mind. It's just you could see the quality, the difference, and I've seen people do that, and I'm just like, right away, it's like,
you
no.
Can tell.
I could tell. And the same thing goes with, with the AI voice. I've tried them out to see what they're like, and you know what? I want a human. I want to hear voice. I don't want to hear a robotic voice. And they've gotten better. Like, there are some softwares out there that sound very human. And there are a lot of people using that AI voiceover, but it's still not exactly perfection. And it's still not a human. You know, are we going to let robots take over the world? You know, it's and that's what we're doing. You know, everybody has a mind. You know, dive deep into it and have confidence in yourself and let your mind go wild and whatever your passion is, whatever you love to do, let your mind just develop and create because that's what it's for, you know, not to use a computer to do it for you.
That's what makes you human. I mean, you can use your mind for math, or you can use a calculator, which isn't a moral compromise of any kind. It's just for the people who are not math equipped. But yeah, absolutely. And I went like this and just demonstrated the hairs rising on my arm. You can always tell when a voice is not human. You can always tell there are subtle inflections and nuances and things like that. We just go, what? Huh? It just seems a little bit off. It's the same thing with a poorly executed deep fake. Just saw Alien Romulus. Not gonna spoil it. But there is a really, I mean, it's believable at certain points, but it is not a 100% solidly executed deepfake. And it's just, you can always tell. Obviously, you know the character and the actor who portrays him are dead. So they can only bring him back now via a deepfake. However, even in Carrie Fisher in Rogue One for Star Wars, they bring her back, and she's deceased. I think she was deceased by that time. But that kind of thing, you're using a computer to do what a human should do. Find a Carrie Fisher lookalike. I just think there's such a we can always tell, and I think we'll be able to tell for a very long time. But you are right, the voices are getting better. I'm not going to say her name because she's right there, but Alexa. She's all throughout our home, and she sounds really real. Oh.
And I do like being able to self-publish better than traditional. I've done both, and I do feel that self-publishing gives you so much more control. And you also, you know, for people who have devoted so much time and effort and they want to monetize and they want to make some money off of their book, you know, and because a book is really to help people, to give people joy. You know, the purpose we write a book for a purpose, you know, and that's our main goal. And then, you know, it's always nice to monetize off of it. But, you
Yeah.
know, when you bring it to a traditional publishing company, they might give you an advance, you know, but like you said, you have to wait forever, you know, and most of the times royalty is nothing, you
Yeah.
know, and you know, and they don't do a lot of marketing and a lot of things that they promise, you know. Maybe if you're Prince Harry or if you're, you know, like an A-class, you know, actor, you might get a few more perks. But for regular people, you know, regular authors, you know, it's you don't have many advantages. Where if you self-publish, you could actually, you know, self-publish, have control of the price too, and also you could distribute worldwide. You can, you know, if you
Yeah.
understand the publishing process, you don't have to just have your book in one area. You could have it in multiple, you know, retail stores and have it, you know, distributed worldwide and have the availability to have it everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another perk. I mean, and the other thing is basically, you talk about marketing. Yes, a traditional publisher will take care of marketing, and marketing is a specter for a lot of people. Like, oh, don't want to do the marketing. Chill out. I mean, it's just you're excited about something, you're going to tell people about it. That's the difference right there. And the best counsel I was ever given by anybody in authoring, and I wish I could remember who it was. I feel terrible about this. So I'm just going to say I said it, and this is my quote. As I've always said, I love the phrase, the best thing about or the best thing to do with marketing is don't market, be an enthusiast. So marketing, people love to buy, they hate to be sold. So I do booths all the time at craft fairs and vendor markets, and I just, man, I cleaned house. Is that the phrase? I cleaned up and cleaned house this past weekend at Olympia, Washington's Harbor Days. Sold 100 books on the nose over 3 days. And they love people love to buy, they hate to be sold. I can always tell when I'm marketing to someone. But enthusiasm is contagious. It's contagious. Don't be a marketer, be an enthusiast. I'm tremendously enthusiastic about this whole series. I'm so enthusiastic about the screenplay, and that enthusiasm carries, and that's what sells books, not the marketing.
No, I agree 100%. And many times I would sell more books when I go to events. And, if I did a speaking event or if I had a booth, people would flock to the booth and like, what's this? And then, you're so enthusiastic about your own writing. You get into it, you tell the story, you explain things. And then right away, I remember one time I brought 500 books. I came home with four, and it
Wow,
was
that's great.
It was crazy, but I sell sometimes, really, I sell more books when I go to events than I do anywhere else because people meet the author. They see who the author is, and that enthusiasm and that energy just rubs off on
Absolutely.
the person. And they like you. They want to learn more about what you're about and your stories and what you have to offer. And and that's the hook right there. It's just they see who the real person is. They like the real person, and then they draw trust, and then they see the product, and it's like, yeah, this sounds great,
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a storyteller. I tell other people's stories in there in my voiceover booth, and I tell my own stories right here. And you're also a storyteller when you're out there selling your books. You're telling the story of the story. And so that is such a great opportunity to tell people what has captivated you over, weeks, months, years writing this book. Or these books. It's a chance for you to really sow seeds of yearning into people's hearts to be part of this enthusiast bandwagon that you're on. And I'm so enthusiastic. I just go out there and I really try to not wrangle people in, but I tell people, want to hear a really cool story? Come on in. And they do. Not all of them, of course. Some people see the banners and they go, well, I'm not a sci-fi fan. Well, that's fine. There's love, come back. There's love in here. No. There's romance. It's a Western and I don't do that's like cheap advertising and misleading. But it's the enthusiasm that always carries and latches people in, and they go, yes, sounds really they always say, sounds really interesting. I'd like to buy this or the whole set. And oh, it's so cool. My next one is next Saturday. But I'm in Barnes and Noble, and so I've got another signing in Barnes and Noble in October.
Excellent.
People do love meeting the author and finding out the person behind the story and what compelled you to write it.
Right. No, it's
It's an
very true.
honor.
Yeah, it really is. As you know, book writing is such a thing. I always enjoyed writing books because it was for me, it was like, I wrote nonfiction. So, the topics I wrote about touched many people's hearts and helped others, And you know what? And with fiction, it does the same because you're taking people away into a world that that brings them joy. It stirs their imagination. It's healthy in so many ways. If you think about it, it's like, you can escape, like you said earlier, it's an escape to a world that is so intriguing, and it's nice sometimes to escape planet Earth because there's many times that I do want to escape planet Earth, and a fiction book is a great way to do it,
Maybe this year, actually, this particular year.
Yeah.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
The escape is a great word, but it's also very cathartic and therapeutic. It's almost medicinal, reading a book and reading a good story. We love stories. We love to be told stories. That's why we love movies so much. That's why we love books. And anything that is, now here's the rub for those people who write sci-fi that's actually more grounded in reality because you're crossing a bridge there. And some people have a hard time straddling that bridge, one foot in the world, one foot in the fictional world. I like that some people need a cleaner break. Like instead of Earth of 2024, oh, let's write it on like Alpha Centauri in the year 3796, you know, and it's like, okay, that's a big break. For me, I like the grounded in reality. I like Star Wars more than Star Trek because Star Wars has the metal panels on the Millennium Falcon are dripping oil out of them because Han Solo is just trying to bang on it and keep it working. I love the grounded in reality nature of my own sci-fi, and those are the ones that attract me more.
No, I love that. Now, for people who are out there, do you have any advice for them? Like, if you had, if people wanted to maybe dip into, into writing, because they don't have to write a large, nonfiction book or a nonfic, or a fiction book. They can write a short story, and even I think, Amazon has an area where you can write short stories, or you could even create a little book, like a small little book to download, and then have like a little series going on. What's your advice for people who have a urge to want to write, but they don't know if they should or they don't think they can, and so forth.
Well, Kindle Vella is what you're referring to for the novellas and the short story sections of KDP. I actually, in terms of self-publishing and writing, I did publish a book called, it's a very lengthy title actually, so I don't even remember what it is, but it's called, How to Self-Publish and Market Your Book, a business guide for the self-published author. I wanted to cram as many keywords in there as I could. So that book's there, I mean, as a help. But ultimately, it's the same advice that we talked about earlier. It's just that one big thing, people mistake writing and self-publishing as something that's going to demand all this money from them. It isn't. You could do everything for absolutely $0. You could do everything. Write it all on your computer, publish it all digitally, and they're a print-on-demand service, so it's not going to cost you anything unless you order author copies, and they ship them to you. But write something compelling. This is again going back to the advice of don't try to be the next J.R.R. Tolkien. Write something that you like. Write something that you are comfortable with, and write it compellingly. And if you aren't a novelist, if you feel like, oh, dude, 350 pages, no way. How about 20 to start with? There's a place for you in avenues like Kindle Vella for sure. Another thing though is that I run a 32,000 member author group on Facebook. It's called Authors and Writers Only, all caps only. The scammers and spammers are out there. The groups are replete with them, but not ours. We're really good at policing them. But boy, so many times you hear aspiring authors and writers voice this common refrain: "I just don't have the money to self-publish my book." And there's two things wrong with that. Number one, it doesn't cost anything usually if you do it the right way. And number two, even if it did, your mindset needs to change because every expense is not an expense at all. It is an investment. If you really want to be an author, then treat every expense, which is short term, as an investment, which is long term. So $20 on a banner, 50 bucks on a few author copies of your books, those are all investments into your own business of being an author. You have to develop a business mindset and do it the right way because you're going to make either coffee bucks as a hobbyist or you're going to make business revenue as treating it as an entrepreneurship.
100%, 100%. Now, if you had to take everything we talked about today and you wanted to emphasize on some important factors, now we talked about your book and we talked about other topics related to book writing. Is there anything that you'd like to emphasize to the listeners today?
Oh boy. I think the biggest thing that I've learned as an author is just it doesn't need to take forever. And people will be shocked by this too. People are shocked when I voice it, but I've published all four of these novels this year. The fifth one will be published this year. The sixth one may be published this year. We'll see. But ultimately, when a story is compelling, when it wants to tell itself, it's going to burst out of you like an alien queen. And there I go talking about aliens again. But it just like alien brain, it wants to be told, and it doesn't need to take forever Now, if you're the kind of person that needs to slow marinate everything and crock pot your stories, that's okay. Let it take as long as it needs to. But man, don't drag your feet. This is a hope and a goal and a dream.
Yeah.
And I feel like as a voiceover artist, I'm running a little bit on borrowed time, what with the damage that AI has done.
Yeah.
I don't have any time to spare. My fingers are flying on the keyboards, creating great stories and getting them edited well. And these are
Right.
full size, these are all, roughly 330 pages, except this Behemoth, which was the finale, is 431 pages.
Wow.
And I did a ton of research on all of them, just militarily, Google landmarks and all that stuff. And do your research, do your due diligence, but man, start hammering out that story and see where it leads you. You don't need to take till you only got till 2026 anyway, because that's when the Gorgons come. You want to get it published before then. So come on,
I
gotta move
love
on.
it. Now, where can people find your books?
I love this question. So I love the question, A, because I get to share it, but you can go to authoraaronryan.com. You can go to the series website, which is dissonancetheseries.com, but dissonance is too hard to spell and people think it's dissidence. It's not dissidence. So an easier way to remember is go to getthesebooks.com.
I
Now,
love.
that's an investment. I didn't have to buy that website through GoDaddy, but that website is easy to remember.
Yes.
Getthesebooks.com will forward you to the Dissonance series. So authoraaronryan.com or getthesebooks.com, and all my social links are at the bottom of each page there.
I love it. I love it. This has been amazing, Aaron. I love, you were great today. First of all, you're very talented, and I'm
Thank
amazed
you.
how you were able to get all these books out in such a short period of time. And they are all doing extremely well and selling very well in the book market. And all your advice today was so inspirational. You really inspired a lot of people, I think, today who want to write but just don't know where to begin and or are afraid to. But you did make a very good point. It's an investment, and that's how people have to look at it. If you want to do it as a hobby or do you want to do it as a career, and that's the choice you have to make. And a lot of the information you provided today was outstanding, and I just love your creativity. And I think you're a great guy, and it's wonderful to have you on the show. And I hope you'll be back one day to, we can talk a little more in depth about a lot of these topics that we hit today.
Love to. Yeah, let's do it before the Gorgons come, though. They come
That's not
on June 6th, 2026, so we have time.
all right. That sounds great. I love it.
My
Well, thank you so much, Aaron. It's been wonderful. Thank you.
pleasure. Thank you.
You have a great day.
You too.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.